Welcome, everyone, to a very special episode celebrating all things mysterious and macabre. This is the evolution of spooky season. I'm Bobby Sox, joined by my fantastic co-hosts Bill and Niels. Today, we're pulling back the cobwebs to uncover how Halloween transformed from ancient rites into a modern-day multiverse of fright.
That's right. And it all began with Samhain, a pagan festival marking the end of harvest and the thinning of the veil between the world of the living and the world of the dead. The ancient Celts believed spirits would roam the earth, so they lit bonfires and wore spooky costumes to ward off any unwanted ghostly visitors. Fast forward a few hundred years, when Romans conquered Celtic territories, they mashed their Feralia celebration, which honored the dead, and the Pomona festival, which celebrated fruit and trees, especially apples, with those old Samhain traditions. It got a little weird.
Pomona is why bobbing for apples became a Halloween classic. But Halloween wasn't always about candy or costumes. In medieval times, folks celebrated All Hallows' Eve with soul cakes, small pastries given out to soulers who went door to door singing for the dead. That's basically trick-or-treating with a spiritual twist.
And how about those quirky traditions? In 18th century Scotland, young people peeled apples in one long strip and tossed them over their shoulders to divine the initials of future sweethearts. Meanwhile, Ireland gave us jack-o'-lanterns, originally carved from turnips, and lit to scare off evil spirits. It's only in America, thanks to pumpkin abundance, that our lanterns started glowing orange.
I want to sort of go back to the turnip movement.
They were creepy.
They were. They were really creepy. Creepier than pumpkins because they're all weird and irregular and wrong.
Hey, let's not forget the oddball Victorian customs. Halloween parties were more about fortune-telling games, divination, and spooky parlor tricks. Guests tried to predict marriage outcomes and future fortunes. Modern haunted attractions like spooky hayrides and haunted houses sprang up in response to 20th century urban legends, and let's face it, some pretty clever marketing.
Today, spooky season lasts weeks, sometimes the whole fall, through pop culture marathons, elaborate yard displays, memes, costumes, and an explosion of pumpkin-flavored, well, everything. We've come a long way from hiding behind a mask in ancient fields to modern commercialism.
So how did spooky season become more than just October 31st? Tonight, we'll unravel those cultural shifts, dig into our favorite peculiar rituals, and maybe uncover how pop culture built a month of delightfully creepy fun. Ready to get frightened, fascinated, and maybe just a little nostalgic?
All right, so those of you guys out there who are regular listeners will have, of course, noticed by now that this episode is late out of the starting gate. We had some technical difficulties over the weekend that led to the loss of our recording of this episode. So here we are, doing it again. I am stuck in a time loop.
It's paradox. Personal connections to Halloween. Big thing that most people don't know about me is that I was terrified of Halloween as a child. Hugely. Hid my eyes in the Halloween aisles, didn't want to ever go to stores all month because I was like, no, it's too scary.
And this is so weird for me because you're one of the creepiest creatures I know.
Yeah, now, you know, my entire world is decorated with coffins, bats, and skeletons. And you're like, what do you mean?
And those decorations for you are pretty much 12 months out of the year, so.
Well, it's home decor, yeah, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Halloween has now become a lifestyle, not just a day. Even though when I was a kid, I was afraid of Halloween, I still always loved it. I mean, it's free candy. You get to dress up out for hours. And then I kind of evolved into it took over my personality, but that's fine. But I know there's one memory that Bill has of one of my very first Halloween that I don't remember because babies' brains don't work like that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that you grew into a fear of Halloween, at least for your early childhood, because you sure seemed to love it the first time around. Your mom and I decided that year that we were going to be a part of the Halloween parade in New York City in Manhattan. And we, while you were in the womb, but the first ultrasound we had of you was very early in the pregnancy, and you looked like just a little tiny bean lying there on your back in the womb. So for the entire pregnancy and for most of your first 2 years of life, we refer to you as the Bean. Well, if we're going to go to a Halloween parade in Manhattan, we all had to have costumes, and you naturally should have been the Bean. So that's what you were. We dressed you up as a little green bean. Your mom went as the farmer, pushing you in the stroller that we turned into a wheelbarrow. And I, because beans need nourishment to grow, I went as the fertilizer, a.k.a. the bag of shit. Which tells you something about your mom and I's relationship, I guess. Had a good time, nevertheless. My earliest memories of Halloween, I hated it. I never liked Halloween. The first Halloween I remember, I was, I think, 3 or 4 years old. My dad at the time had a fascination with those plastic fake eyeglasses with the big bulbous nose and the fuzzy mustache hanging underneath it.
I'm already suffering for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Your upper lip feeling itchy?
Yeah, right.
I was so small, my bottom lip was itchy, too, because the thing just covered my mouth. And they threw something white and black on me. I looked like a nun with facial hair. And ever since that time, I have I dislike getting dressed up in costumes. I mean, we followed up the fuzzy mustache with the plastic masks that are like, you know, you're breathing into an enclosed system and
yeah, I had those as a kid. The 70s torture device. Yeah, it's like when your parents decided it was time to hotbox you, they put you in one of those.
Yeah, yeah,
but not with the fun of
no, more like Vietnam.
And then the goddamn nylon and rayon costumes don't brush up against a jack-o'-lantern; you'll go up like a Tibetan monk in a pool of gasoline.
They were horrible. For us, it was plastic. For us, it was like basically a trash bag with arms cut out of it that was printed in weird patterns and colors and printed to look like a costume.
So like, it was great being the poor kid. Worse?
Yeah, it was so great being the poor kid, man. Let me tell you, Halloween was wonderful.
Even being the poor kid, I guess for me, costumes had evolved a lot by the time I was a kid, and they were more soft, and sometimes there was the scratchy material, but I remember the most uncomfortable was how many fucking layers I used to have on underneath because October used to be cold.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Back in the days before global warming.
You remember when October used to be cold?
You mean the before fall time? Before the apocalypse?
Back in the day?
Some of my earliest costumes that I at least remember, I was a cat. I was Kim Possible 1 year. How could I not be? I don't know. And then, of course, at some point in middle school, I was Billy Joe Armstrong. So it all went the right way eventually.
Yeah, you got more creative over time. You started like trying to build your own costumes instead of just
what. Yeah, you remember there was a year I was Jack Skellington. There was a year I was Alex from Clockwork Orange, and I found out the hard way that I don't do fake lashes.
Oh, well, you get that from me because, ironically, as much as I hated doing costumes, I love doing community theater, and oddly enough, two of my favorite roles.
Most makeup ever.
Were the most makeup I have ever had to wear for anything. Marley's Ghost and the zombie in Night of the Living Dead. Marley's Ghost was terrific. At first they slathered me in just general ghost makeup, hollow cheeks, bags under the eyes. And then they coated all of that with a fluorescent powder so that when they shined the green spotlight on me, I had an aura. Thank God that was a short run. I don't know if I would have lasted a full 2 months.
I'm just trying to picture Bill with a green aura.
Better was the zombie makeup with the red eyeliner. He looked like me.
For me, there was really only one that stood out, and you guys have heard this story. You know, it wasn't a big thing for me to have costumes every year or good costumes every year in my family. And when I hit the eighth grade, I desperately wanted to go to the eighth grade school dance as something, anything. Mm. And we were talking about it with our neighbor where we lived at the time. She's like, wait, I have something. Lady comes back with a full-size Minnie Mouse costume. It's got the dress. It's got the big hands with the three fingers, the gloves, you know, and this giant Minnie Mouse head, ears stuffed, fur, the whole bit. And she's got the shoes. And the way this went down was I've always had this voice. I've never had a falsetto, right? So you have to picture me now. Eighth grade me, I'm already a delinquent, standing outside this gymnasium, smoking a cigarette. And somebody walks up to me and is like, that's a great costume. Who is that? And I'm like, none of your business. So, yeah. So that was probably my favorite Halloween, was that one good year.
So So, I mean, how did we get here? How did we get from Halloween being just October 31st, maybe the week before there was some excitement, to now it's spooky season, and it starts kind of in August. I mean, this year in stores, it started in fucking July. I was thrilled.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, we have capitalism to thank. I mean, we all know that, but.
Exactly. Let's harken back to last week's or our last episode on class warfare and how the mid-20th century became from build, 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 we turned into buy, 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 and everybody ever since has been moving the holiday season forward in the calendar so they can sell more 4th of July decorations, Halloween decorations, Thanksgiving decorations.
Well, and if you look at the pattern, you know, Bobby touched on it a couple minutes ago. If you look at the pattern, they're bleeding into each other now.
Mm-hmm.
We have now hit peak holiday. There is always a holiday season that we are in and should be buying something for.
Because
if it's not back to school, which I'm going to count, it's Halloween, or it's Christmas, or it's Valentine's Day. You see where I'm going with this. Or it's Easter.
Or it's Easter, or it's 4th of July and Memorial Day.
You're always prepping for the next one. The last one is the beginning of the next one at this point commercially, and it's gotten pretty messed up.
These
are holidays
worse.
That were designed to celebrate things and stuff.
Yeah, and now times they celebrate, of year.
Yeah, and now they celebrate what? How much we can spend and display on our lawns for each other? Like, it's a little weird.
Yeah, it is like, you know. I'll be honest, as someone who now like lives and breathes Halloween, I was excited to start seeing spooky things coming into store into July, but it also really sucks that it was like October 1st, 2nd that the Christmas displays went up, and I won't wait a goddamn minute.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah, wait. Yeah. Wait.
Let me get through Halloween. I need to watch Alien at least 4 times.
Yeah. I ain't got my ghost on yet.
I got shit to do this month. What do you mean? And it's also disheartening. I went out the other day and it's the beginning of October. Well, mid-October. I should be excited to go to stores and see spooky things. I'm going to stores and seeing Christmas things and I'm getting.
But I remember when it used to be cold and wet this time of year.
I have also wondered if global warming has had a subconscious cultural impact on where we see the holidays, because there's also weather that we associate with
absolutely
these holidays.
Absolutely. And seasonal
like,
tides. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, even around Christmas, it hasn't really been snowing anymore. So, I mean, between commercialization, weather changing, and I mean, I guess the weather changing, are pumpkins getting ripe earlier now? Is that why?
I would imagine.
So, like, here we go. It's this whole. Don't you love sociology?
Listen, maple syrup is becoming scarcer and scarcer. Because of the way climate change has affected the maple trees. There's a specific warm, cold thing that has to go on for them to produce the sap that makes the maple syrup. And the warm, cold thing has been all out of balance in many places. And they ain't getting the sap they need to make the maple syrup that I like to suck down on my pancakes that I have to pay $15 a quart for.
That sounds like a Turbo and You episode going off about maple syrup.
So we look at the commercialization and the capitalization and all of this. And one of the things that I notice is how basically capitalist societies have picked and chosen which elements of Halloween they're going to keep and throw away based on what they can make money on.
Yeah, bingo. And it does lead into pop culture, too.
Right, right. So we've got the costumes.
Yeah,
and we've got the candy. And we've got the opportunity to make money on both. Yeah. But we don't have much meaning behind any of it.
Don't forget the exorbitant lawn decorations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Depending on where
you
are. You
want to know something?
Really cool.
I drove past a house. It was the last week of September. I was just leaving the neighborhood. I only saw it briefly as I was going past. It was like a corner house. And it looked like the front lawn was full of religious statuary and tombstones. And I was like, you can't bury people on you. And by the time the thought was in my head, I was already down the road. I can't believe the expense they had to have gone to create this. It's like a roadside attraction.
Yeah, but I love that. To me, that's part of the fun.
Like, that's part of it. But also with Halloween, and we'll probably get into this later when we talk about like controversies, but if there's any holiday I'm seeing less and less people decorate for in the U.S., it's Halloween.
All right, but the point I was making was not that it isn't fun and that it isn't cool.
But it does get to a point.
It's commercialization.
It is. It is commercialization.
People being convinced that they have to spend the dollars they don't have to do things they really can't afford.
That's fair. I mean, with decorations, though, I would point that more at Christmas, really. That's the fight. That's neighbors literally trying to fucking outdo each other and the worst light pollution the world
when
has
I was
fucking seen.
Much, much younger. The year that I used 1.2 million Christmas lights, I was featured in the local newspaper and realized that I'd become too competitive with the whole thing. And I backed off, and I haven't really decorated much for Christmas since.
I'm surprised you admitted that.
But this was...
That's a lot of lights.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was many lights. You could see it from the beach.
You could probably see it from the International Space Station. You fucking kidding me?
I went full fucking Griswold.
But I mean, other than commercialization, we also have pop culture, and a big thing being horror movies and how the attitude towards horror movies has changed over the years. When you and Niels were kids, it was kind of like weird, like you were the weird kid if you liked horror movies. You couldn't go.
Well, they weren't mainstream back then.
Yeah, they weren't mainstream. It was still like a subculture thing. And now it's like you think Halloween, at least my generation, I think Halloween, I think Scream, I think Chucky, I think all the horror icons, I think Freddy, you know, Sam from Trick or Treat. Like, it's become a whole new thing. And especially little kids.
Some part of the reason they weren't mainstream back then is because networks had broadcast standards that censored out the 7 words you can't say on television, anything related to human sexuality, and blood and gore and guts and veins. If a theatrical horror movie ended up on television, all the good shit was cut out of it because they weren't allowed to show it.
That was one of the big distinctions of early cable, was the fact that they could show it.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, and that gave an early audience to horror in the home. And that, you know, since we're talking about Halloween, we might as well talk about horror. But horror's influence on pop culture in the last 50 years has been massive.
Yeah. Because, like, with horror icons, I mean, we're not just talking like preteens and like teenagers that are into the horror movies. It's like, no, these elementary school kids want to be Chucky. They want to be Michael Myers. You know, it's these toddlers that are running around.
Chucky.
Dressed as Chucky, where you're like, oh shit, is that Chucky? Because that's the right fucking size.
Yeah.
Don't punk the child. Well, no, and a lot of these kids, too, have seen the movies.
That's
you
where
know?
It gets weird to me, because these are things that we didn't get to watch as kids, but it points to something larger in society, right?
Mm-hmm.
What we view as transgressive, what we view as over the line, well, that line has moved in the last 50 years so far. It's insane.
I think the best example is I recently watched The Exorcist in the past year, and I thought it was fucking hysterical. I thought that shit was hysterical. It was funny. It was, and like, I know part of it was old effects, and like, you know, obviously I'm used to much more realistic things now, but like, for me, I'm like, what do you mean people had to be taken out of a theater?
That's
just funny as fuck. Yeah.
You know, what do you mean there were lines around the block to see this? But that's the proof in the pudding. Back then, that movie was highly transgressive. You didn't show that. You didn't talk about it, let alone depict it.
Now it's a cult classic, I would say, in the world, in the realm of horror.
In my day, in the early 60s, in-home horror entertainment was limited to like the Addams Family and the Munsters.
Which were considered horror.
Which were, and I wasn't allowed to watch those because my mother was afraid I'd have nightmares and be up half the night.
Yeah, the closest thing I have to that is I wasn't allowed to watch Courage the Cowardly Dog. One of the few times my mom was right, I absolutely would have had fucking nightmares if I was watching that shit in elementary school when I was still scared of Halloween. That's some scary goddamn shit.
My mom and I had a weird mismatch because my mother always loved the bloodiest, goriest, most freaky horror films. And I wasn't allowed to see them because I wouldn't sleep. So I'd be, you know, it's like, time to put Neil to bed early so I can watch Cannibal Holocaust.
I did have a very, like, hard right turn evolution because it really went, like, fifth grade. I'm still kind of terrified of Halloween to, like, sixth, seventh grade. My favorite movies are the Texas Chainsaw Massacre series.
Hard turn. And we like to say that the horror our children watch doesn't affect them.
Uh-huh. If anybody in this bunker is going to wind up wearing someone's skin.
Huh? I have only one suspect.
So you've got the movies. You've got the way movies hit our culture. And with the way things in movies have spread in our culture, right? And the way things we see on TV have spread in our culture.
Memes.
And but it's not just memes. It's, you know, like the haunted hayride.
Yeah.
In a lot of places, that's an idea that the locals got from television.
Mm.
Or, you know, you think about other scary stuff. Corn mazes.
Yeah.
Children of the corn.
Well, corn mazes, old tradition.
Yeah, right? They do predate that.
And then it gets updated with things like Children of the Corn and that sort of thematic symbolism. And then The Shining and that sort of thematic symbolism.
Yeah. Have either of you heard an urban legend that's in some areas, and this is spread randomly throughout the United States? The spirit of Halloween. And no, I'm not talking about the store. This, like, was a thing that, like, some of my friends in elementary school did, but some of them had never heard of. And it was, like, this whole thing where if you don't dress up and at least, kind of like from Trick or Treat, if you don't dress up and celebrate the holiday and light a candle,
Sam will come find you.
Well, no, it's like the spirit of Halloween will leave your house and you won't get any good candy.
Ooh, the mythology that kids make up. I love it.
Yeah, and like some neighborhoods would also have little flyers that would say, like, the spirit of Halloween has left your house for any houses left undecorated on Halloween night.
Wow. The great pumpkin
which now
shit
could
upon
probably
you.
Cause violence because we've got to this point in our country that, like, you know, don't do that because
liberal horror movie scumbags.
Yeah, like, you know, but that one was one that I thought was fun because it was always like, I feel like when I was a kid, I always ended up around a group of different kids trick-or-treating because my mom would drive me around to the richer areas for the better candy. So it really was seeing, like, some towns had that and some towns didn't, and it was completely random.
May the great pumpkin shit upon your family.
Was this just picturing pumpkin seeds and goo flying everywhere?
that hit me so hard that I... That talk about pop culture.
So speaking of pop culture, let's talk pop culture. What's your favorite horror movie, Bobby Sox?
God, you know,
tis the season.
I know, and I've been exposed to so many very rapidly in the past year or so that I'm like, it's hard for me
to pick
right now. The Chucky series, that's 8 whole movies, but that ended up, I was like, okay, I get the hype. And they got better and better and better, at least in my opinion. And that's difficult for horror movies, especially sequels. You don't usually expect to always be good. You expect them to shit.
Yeah.
And the Chucky movies, there were some that weren't as good as the others, but I was like, okay, these are good. I still like anything gory, really. I'm not a body horror guy.
I'm a sci-fi horror guy.
That's fair.
For me, it's Event Horizon. With Sam Neill, was one of my all-time favorites. And the original Alien film, the first one, the very first one.
You know what? Well, know what horror movie I feel like has to make it to at least my top 10? Slay.
Okay, I haven't seen it yet. But I heard really good things. So it's on my list for the spooky
season. It's a horror comedy. But there's gore in there.
Some of the best ones are horror comedies or dark comedies.
Shaun of the Dead. That one.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. Classic.
And I mean, not horror movie, but like my every year spooky movie is Beetlejuice.
Yep. What about you, Bill?
Interesting. You mentioned Alien. I've got a top two. Alien was one of them. The original Invasion of the Body Snatchers. One of the first horror movies.
Creepy
I
movie.
Saw as a child. Boy, why you point fingered at me?
I'm just thinking of Donald Sutherland screaming and pointing in the street.
Okay, yeah. 70s one. Yeah, I was probably about, I don't know.
I don't think I've seen that one.
I had to have been about 12 or 13 years old. I was old enough where I could stay up late at night on the weekend and watch The Late Show, and that's where I saw it.
See, now there's a great place, little rabbit hole to go down, is you were alive for the era of some of the coolest early horror films and sci-fi films. You know, you were around when ground was being broken. We didn't get the big changes. We didn't get those milestones. They were all before us. You got to see things when they were young. So you got to see 2001 when 2001 was still a vision of the future.
I got to see it in a theater. the week it came out.
That must have been mind-blowing, you know?
It absolutely was.
And how old were you when The Exorcist came out? Was that something you saw in theaters?
I was either just last year of high school or first year of college, 74-ish, I want to say. Another one. I saw that at the drive-in.
Wow.
Saw Jaws at the drive-in, too.
Wow.
Da-dum.
So I'm going to get copyright infringement.
Right. No, it's not enough bars.
That's enough bars. Thanks, Dad. Thanks, Obama.
So let's talk about some of the quirks and controversies we've got today, because this is something that we goof about every year, right, Bobby?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. The clowns, 2016, the year of the clowns. That was interesting, an interesting look into human psychology that year, just because it was random. So wait, didn't it start as a promotion for like part one or two of it?
No, that was the balloons.
That was the
red balloons. Yes. The red helium balloons just randomly tied to shit appearing places.
All right. And I think somewhere along the line, somebody thought the clown thing was also part of that, but I'm pretty sure it was just random. Random people who didn't really seem to be like
connected, related, or otherwise in cat boots.
Yeah, at all across the country, just fucking clowns and forests and fields, all like
roadsides.
Though,
and like, no, we still don't know if it's gonna happen every year or not because
clowns are fucking creepy.
Yeah, that was fun, I guess.
It's a thing.
Yeah, that was just
that's a thing. You've got, you know, we talked about this back in the episode where we talked about freedom of speech and bans and porn bans, but you've got horror movie bans.
Yeah.
You have places that legitimately try and ban horror movies, usually as obscene.
My mom would have been on that bandwagon probably.
Yeah, because you know,
the goddamn Addams Family.
They're going to corrupt the youth, and the next thing you know, what are they going to do? The youth. So, yeah. Social media really kind of took over today's version of the holiday.
Yeah, and I mean, we've also had talk about weird controversies or myths. How long has the razor blade in the candy myth existed?
My God, that existed when I was a child.
Yeah, I didn't realize it went back that long. I know for me, it's more about drugs being hidden in candy. And let me just reiterate for anyone who doesn't know this, no stoner's going to give your kid their fucking edibles. Them shit's expensive. But I didn't realize the razor blade thing went back that far.
Yeah, that's like one of the early ones. Some of the newer ones are great, though. Like the candy is loaded with fentanyl.
So was I when I was born. Sorry, fuck.
Wow. Fentanyl has become the new drug to talk about on the new fentanyl. Enough fentanyl in this Reese's peanut butter cup to kill a bus. Not the people on it, the bus.
The bus.
It's like, so we've got that. And then on the right, we've got the fun one. They're going to put their trans drugs in the candy. They're going to trans my kid. My kid is going to wake up tomorrow morning and he's going to have a high-pitched voice and a balls.
Do you know how
because
hard?
They're going to trans my kid.
I'm taking this time out. Do you know how hard it is to start hormone replacement therapy, otherwise known as HRT? Nobody's putting their fucking estrogen pills in the Snickers, Karen. Calm down. Apologies to my Aunt Karen who listens. You are not one of those Karens.
Can we talk about Jesus Ween?
Somebody Jesus talk Ween. About it, because I don't know about it.
Okay, so a couple of years ago in our neck of the woods, these billboards and signs and backs of buses started showing up saying, "Don't worship Satan, practice Jesus Ween or celebrate Jesus Ween." And we Googled it, and Jesus Ween was basically about dressing your kids up as one of the apostles, or if you're Catholic, a saint, and sending them out to collect candy. That's a brilliant idea.
I'm sorry.
Especially around here.
You want to talk about sacrilegious. Isn't it like sacrilegious to dress your children up as saints?
Maybe we should just do a week of Bible study and call it.
God, I don't want to do any more Bible study.
Yeah, let's not say we did.
That's why I stopped doing that. But also, Halloween has also turned into the time of year to like dress like a slut. So you want to make Jesus Ween, you're asking for slutty nuns.
I get down with some sluts.
Latex nuns?
Yeah, exactly.
Asking for a friend.
Yeah, you're And, you know, that's how you get the gays all dressed up as priests and calling each other daddy instead of father. Jesus, Wayne. You know, there is one cultural debate, I guess, about Halloween that I have. I think that young adults and teenagers should not be looked down on for trick-or-treating. Because there's so many other awful things that kids in that age range can be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially socially at a large scale. Come on.
Yeah. So leave them alone. Let them have fun. Let them, you know.
Let them pull it off as long as they can. And then when they're too old, send them home.
Yeah.
Like you're 24. No.
Yeah. But when they start coming to your door expecting the little airline liquor bottles instead of candy, you know they're done. Cut them off.
When they have a beard.
Well, no. When they get to that age, that's when, you know, the stoners have their own trick-or-treat circle. It has definitely changed in the past century. At least in the U.S., I feel like it's gone through very rapid, very marketed changes.
I think the biggest change for me was when I was a kid, got home from school, usually didn't have a lot of homework because the teachers knew it was Halloween. Got home from school, put your costume on, parents sent you out the door with a sack and told you, whatever you got in that sack by dark is what you got.
That is your dinner, child.
Well, no, I mean they weren't out there following you around. You had the run of the neighborhood, you and your friends, 3, 4, 8, 10 of you, whatever it was. And we went for blocks and blocks and blocks.
For me, I mean, parents followed, not always holding hand, but at least, you know, elementary school, middle school time. Parents followed, but it was some parents in cars a few blocks down to drive us to the next neighborhood or whatever. Or, I mean,
oh, we weren't that soft. We had
not only that, a lot of us also, our parents would have an extra like garbage bag in the car. We'd fill up our pillowcase when I was a kid, you didn't use pillowcases. Your parents went to the store and bought you some type of trick or treat bag. But, you know, we'd have a garbage bag in the car that, you know, you fill your bucket, then you go dump it and we keep walking out. There was no cut off until people really stopped answering the doors.
Halloween and Christmas, my mom was cool because she would use the retractable leash instead of the regular one.
God damn it.
How cool.
I had very protective parents.
You would be one of those kids. That would make so much sense into your adult psyche.
Oh, I had the little bouncy harness when I was a toddler. Oh, God, yeah. How do you think I wound up this kinky?
We'll get into that on the Kink 101 episode somewhere in the future.
Well, once you're over the precipice, you might as well just keep falling, kids.
Yep, that's right, Thelma.
Do you guys have any personal traditions that you do around Halloween or spooky season? Like, I know for me, like, watching Beetlejuice has become a thing that I have to do every year.
You know, I didn't do it this year, but every year I do a month of horror movies. I watch a horror movie or so a day. I usually go through 4 or 5 a week, so not
every
day.
Well, I mean, I feel like horror series count, because I know you've been on Alien Earth. I think you finished it. Don't give spoilers. But I would call horror series counting, too, at this point. I've been introduced to a lot of good horror TV series because, I mean, Bill knows this for a while. Main realm. Oh, and Niels is going to hate this. My main realm of what was considered horror TV was Supernatural, which personally I never considered horror. Whenever Netflix puts Supernatural in the horror category, I'm like, you'd be more correct putting it in the LGBTQ category.
They need to put it in the fanfic that is about itself category.
That is fair, but some good horror shows. Fucking Ash vs. Evil Dead.
I challenge you to watch Buffy.
You know, I haven't.
It was amazing at the time, but it's so dated now. It's
Because, like, I watched Charmed, and that was coming around the same time as Buffy, right?
Yep.
Yeah, but is Charmed considered horror? No.
Not really.
I don't think so. I'm thinking, like, also, what is it, Ash vs. Evil Dead, Todd versus the Book of Pure Evil. Wish that didn't get canceled.
Halloween never being my favorite holiday. I never had any traditions. I almost established one with Night of the Living Dead, the stage production. I did it 3 years in a row and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And then COVID shut everything down.
Oh, that sucks.
I had a cute tradition growing up. A couple, actually. So I had a tradition for if I was ever sick on Halloween, which was make spooky trail mix. So it'd be like, you know, like pretzels, M&Ms, candy corn, even though I could only eat three before my stomach hurt. And then bringing all the jack-o'-lanterns inside and watching Scooby-Doo Ghoul School.
Cool, cool.
That's my favorite Scooby-Doo movie. And then another one was I had this book called Halloweener, which I actually was able to recover.
I'm not gonna read it every year.
Yeah, I'm not touching it either.
It is about a dachshund who wants to be something scary so for Halloween, but his mom already made him a hot dog costume, and he gets bullied by all the other dogs. And it ends up happy at the end because, like, the cats in the book are trying to scare the dogs to take all their candy, and then you find out that the Halloweener, whose name is Oscar, his costume can float and saves the dogs from the
last name Meyer.
I don't think so. I still have the book. It's cute. It's cute. I know the name made everybody go, oh, no, it's about penises. No, it's about dachshund.
And that's our look at spooky season. From its ancient roots to its pumpkin spice drenched present, it's clear that Halloween has become a cultural funhouse mirror, reflecting our anxieties, our consumer habits, and our need for a little bit of controlled chaos.
It's definitely more than just one day. It's the one time of year you can publicly demand treats from strangers, and it's considered charming. But let's be real. The most terrifying thing we discuss today is the sheer amount of single-use plastic in a Spirit Halloween store. Haunts you for years.
A truly chilling thought. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. A huge thank you to everyone for downloading and tuning in to Critical Defiance.
We've spent this episode deconstructing the why of the season, the commerce, the culture, the costumes. But all this talk about things that go bump in the night has us wanting to hear some of the things that go bump ourselves.
Oh yeah, so next episode, we're leaning into the darkness. We're putting the policy papers aside and picking up the flashlight to tell Stutterbus. So next episode, we're leaning into the darkness. We're putting the policy papers aside and picking up the flashlight to tell some of our listeners' most compelling, creepy, and just plain weird tales.
And we're not just talking about your standard campfire stories. We're digging into modern myths, political hauntings, and the strange folklore that reveals the real fears lurking in the American psyche. It's going to be a weird and hopefully a fascinating ride.
Indeed, Bill. You absolutely won't want to miss it. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your audio fix so you can catch that episode the second it drops.
There's a fucking spider on the ceiling.
You can find all the sources for today's discussion on our website at criticaldefiance.com.
There's a spider on the ceiling and I'm free.
Spider on the ceiling, coming for me, Halloween time.
I'm actually afraid. I'm afraid the spider's gonna drop on me like a fucking drop bear.
Okay, can we just jump to the credits?
I'm gay.
This episode was brought to you by your trio of hosts and producers, Niels, Bobby Sox, and myself, Bill.
The sonic wizardry you're hearing is crafted by our audio team of Niels and Jack, with invaluable input and support from Turbo, our associate producer.
Our creative content comes together thanks to our collaborative writer's room featuring all the voices you've heard, plus additional contributions from our talented friends, Skeeter and Skeeter.
And don't forget that none of this would be possible without the amazing community of subscribers and contributing members who not only keep us going financially, but actively participate in shaping our episode topics and our show format.
I forgot how to breathe for half a second because I'm scared of this bite. Want to dive deeper or join the conversation? Visit us at criticaldefiance.com and make sure to hit that subscribe button on whatever podcast platform you use. That's literally how we keep the lights on.
And here's an insider tip. We have launched a fresh Discord community where the discussion continues all week long, and you can find the link waiting for you on our website.
That wraps up this week's episode. Keep embracing the spooky and never stop being defiant.